Since 9/11, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been committed to supporting our nation's first responders and veterans, heroes who put their lives on the line for our communities and our country. Heroes like U.S. Army Major Jonathan Turnbull. Major Turnbull sustained devastating injuries at the hands of an ISIS suicide bomber. The complete loss of his left eye, a puncture to his right eye, he needed more than 20 surgeries and countless hours of rehabilitation. Tunnel to Towers paid off his mortgage and gave him a specially adapted smart home designed for his needs. He moves around his home more easily now. His home also gives him hope. With help from people like you, the foundation supports families like the Turnbulls. Join Tunnel to Towers in supporting America's heroes, our nation's catastrophically injured veterans and first responders, homeless veterans, Gold Star families, and the families of fallen first responders. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2, T.org. 95 cents of every dollar goes directly to their programs.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
If you are an accredited investor, U.S. oil and gas should be part of your investment portfolio. Visit LabradorEnergy.com. Beyond the possibility to invest in a sector that historically delivers sound returns, when you invest with Labrador Energy, you may be able to structure your investment to offset active or passive income. According to many sources, U.S. oil and gas drilling remains one of the best tax-advantaged income investments available. Visit LabradorEnergy.com. You may be able to reduce your tax liability while investing in a sector that has historically delivered sound returns. Learn more at LabradorEnergy.com today.
Offer for accredited investors only. Past performance is no indication of future results. Investing involves risk. Consult your legal, tax, and financial advisors and read the prospectus before making any investment decisions. Visit LabradorEnergy.com for the prospectus and more information.
So I know you've got a lot going on, but remember, I'm here for you. So bother me when no one's listening, because I will. Bother me when it feels like it won't get better, because it can. Bother me because you're never a bother. Whether it's a low point or a crisis, get help for yourself or a friend. Learn more at neverabother.org or call or text 988, available 24/7.
You're listening to the Buck Sexton Show podcast. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Buck Brief, everybody. On this episode, our friend Orrin McIntyre, host of the Orrin McIntyre Show at The Blaze, and now author of his latest book, The Total State. It is total, and it is a state. He's going to talk to us about it. What's going on, Orrin?
Hey, man. Thanks for having me.
So, total state. Walk me through this one. Feels like these days we talk about liberty and constitutional rights and the system in charge treats that all like it's a suggestion, if not a joke. What is the total state?
Yeah, exactly, man. Like you, I probably, I grew up listening to talk radio as kind of a standard issue, talk radio Republican. And then 2020 happened and we all got locked in our houses. We couldn't go to church. We couldn't go to work. You couldn't go outside. And then everything happened with BLM, the riots, the election. And I just looked around and I was like, what happened to all that liberty, right? I was told the Constitution was going to stand in the way of all this stuff. We were going to have this separation of powers and everything that was going to stop the government when tyranny came. And nothing happened. And I was kind of blown away. And so The Total State, the book, is really my attempt to kind of document that crisis and my faith of like the Constitution, the American system, and what went on, like I think a lot of people had during that time. And so I walk through this journey of how liberal democracies around the world kind of randomly became tyrannies in the year 2020.
There's that Fukuyama end of history essay, which I think started out as or it was an essay in Foreign Affairs, is also a longer version of it that's sold, I think, in book form. Maybe the essay is just sold also as a book. I can't remember. But it's Fukuyama end of history. It's like democracy is basically one. We're all. What if we're at the end of liberty? Meaning, what if we're at a place where You know, America is the only country that I can think of where there's any real sense of get off my lawn, government, leave me alone. I'm going to keep my guns. And there are some lines you shall not cross. I think I think some of those lines were crossed, to your point, in 2020 and beyond during COVID pandemic. But we're the outlier. So if we're not really free, is anybody really free? As in, does everybody just want a total state now and they don't know it yet?
Yeah, the things that happened in America were egregious, but you're right that here we got off better than most places. It was even more insane in places like Canada and Australia. And Fukuyama's thesis in the end of history was that liberal democracy and capitalism had kind of solved the government question, right? The USSR had collapsed. All meaningful opposition to the ideas of America and the wider West was over. And so the only question was how much better would we get at democracy? How much better would we get at capitalism? History was over. And now it's just about perfecting the institutions that had proven to be the best. But what we saw, like you said, in 2020 was that actually that battle isn't over, and that many people who thought they lived under this system of freedom and rights actually found themselves snapping right into line when the jackboots came. And so, as you said, the question really becomes, what is in charge if it isn't this liberal democracy that we believe in? And the answer I come to in the total state is that actually we've all been conquered by a system called managerialism, and that managerialism manifested itself differently in, say, communist Russia than it did in the United States. But it's slowly come to dominate all of the governments in the modern world.
Tell me more about managerialism. That's an interesting concept. I mean,
James Burnham is a guy who many people might be familiar with. He's actually one of the people, along with William F. Buckley, who started the National Review. But many people forget that his most influential book was about the managerial revolution. His thesis was that while we looked at these different governments, communism, fascism, liberal democracy, actually, all of the governments in the modern world at the time he was writing, which was the 1940s, kind of fell under the same system, which was this idea of managerialism, where the power of the democracy, the people, actually needed to be managed. It needed to be channeled through experts who were good at mass consumption, mass production, transportation, communication, armed forces. Everything had to be funneled through these large managerial bureaucracies. And so while we did have different flavors of managerialism, it came to dominate all of these different countries, because if you wanted to become modern, if you wanted to be able to mass produce things, distribute things, scale up your society and go ahead and create larger institutions, you needed to deploy the expertise of managers. And these managers created reliable systems that we depended on to deliver the food and the entertainment and everything else that we now think of as kind of ubiquitous in our society. And those forms have particular things that they produce, particular behaviors that they favor. And that's why even though you would think that communist China and, I don't know, the government of the United States should have different goals, you know, they say they have different ideological structures, but we're seeing that they're getting closer and closer together at every step. And the reason why is that they're both embracing this idea of managerialism.
What freedoms do we really have still in this country? I mean, we've run the experiment. We ran kind of the stress test with COVID, where you don't actually have the freedom to worship, right? Because, you know, somebody could sneeze on you and then everyone dies because COVID. So you didn't have the freedom to go to church, synagogue, mosque, wherever, you know, temple, whatever religion you are. You don't have the freedom of religion. Clearly don't have freedom of speech because we have the government colluding with big tech to shut people down. These days, you know, whether they say it's hate speech or it's disinformation or just wrong think, they will use government and private sector mechanisms to shut you down and do those in conjunction and act like somehow that's not just using agency of the private sector for government means. And I mean, I could go down the list, right? I mean, the right to bear arms kind of sort of depends where you are. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it feels these days that we talk about the land of the free, the home of the brave. Yeah, we got a lot of brave people still, but are we free? I don't know. I increasingly feel like we tell ourselves that we're free, And you can say that to yourself, even if you, let's say, own your house outright. But you got to rent it from the government every year and pay taxes. You know what I'm saying? Like, what exactly can you do where you are actually free?
Yeah, not much anymore, right? The state has grown, again, to this massive size and this level of intrusion that it feels like it controls every aspect. And you're right to point out the collusion between the public and the private sector. One of the things we tend to pride ourselves about in the United States is this idea of the division between the state and the private sector. And we know that the Bill of Rights and constitutional limitations primarily pertain to the government itself. That's where all of these careful restrictions that the founders built in are supposed to be applied. However, what the government has figured out is really that it can go ahead and collude with the private sector, and the private sector is happy to do this because it gives them additional power and influence. It tends to give them monopolies in the different areas that they run things. And so they go ahead and weave this pattern together of these different managerial bureaucracies and apparatuses. And this is why we see a revolving door between corporations, government entities, non-government entities, all working together. The same personnel tend to shift from one to the other. They're all connected. And the reason is that they're all working in a similar direction. Now, I don't think there's one large overarching conspiracy between these people where they kind of hand down their orders from some kind of Bilderberg cheat sheet. However, I do think they all share the same value set, which is kind of the progressive morality that they got from the institutions that they all attended when they were young, which was college. And this serves as kind of the church of the progressive total state, which gives them all kind of the marching orders, the moral basis on which they're going to make their decisions. And then when they start working, they kind of just naturally network and work together towards the same goal. Though, as we can see from things like the Twitter files, that collusion is getting more and more explicit in its nature.
Word from our sponsor here, American Financing, family-owned mortgage company, helping homeowners for over 24 years. They helped me. I got my mortgage with American Financing. I trust these people. Right now, they're saving homeowners like you an average of $854 a month by tapping into your home's equity to pay off high-interest debt, or their home's equity, rather. If you have high-interest debt on credit cards, for instance, it's a great way to reduce debt, save money on each month. Mortgage rates now in the fives, lower than they've been in some time. So just make a 10-minute phone call to American Financing's salary-based mortgage consultants. Find out how much they can save you. Call today. They never charge any upfront fees. You may even be able to delay two mortgage payments. American Financing, 800-777-8109. That's 800-777-8109. Or visit AmericanFinancing.net. NMLS 182334, NMLSConsumerAccess.org. APR for rates in the five start at 6.6% for well-qualified borrowers. Call 800-777-8109 for details about credit costs and terms. Orin, do people think that they want a much bigger state than they realize? Or rather, do people want a much bigger state than they think? That's why I meant to ask that question. As in, we're $34 trillion in debt. Everyone says, oh my gosh, the debt's so bad. And Republicans will say, oh, the debt's, and it is, right? I mean, just as a function of numbers, you look at what interest payments look like. It's effectively intergenerational theft that's going on. But put that aside for a second. Anytime you talk to a Republican about this, you say, yeah, they say it's terrible. I say, oh, I agree, it's terrible. And they go, well, maybe we should do something about it. And then we say, let's cut something. And if you want to cut anything that would be meaningful to the $1 trillion extra we're spending each year now, give or take, to add to the $34 trillion we're already in debt, you know what happens? People scream and freak out at you on the right. So do we all want a bigger government than we're willing to admit? Is that where things are now? I start to get a little cynical about this.
Well, I think what it is really the incentive structure of democracy. In democracy, let's be really clear, vote buying is the most effective strategy. Nobody wants to vote for austerity. Nobody wants to vote for fiscal responsibility. We all like it in theory, but as long as we can go ahead and hand that buck down, to the next generation, like you said, we can go ahead and pass it down and do this intergenerational theft, then we don't really notice. The truth is that if people have the option to go ahead and choose whether to get the money now and worry about the consequences later, they're almost always going to do that, especially in a democracy where we kind of get to collectively hand that responsibility over. Maybe you wouldn't do that individually. Maybe you wouldn't go ahead and get a payday loan as an individual. But as a mass of people, yeah, we do that over and over again. And Alexis de Tocqueville warned us about this when he observed the beginnings of democracy in America. He said that as soon as the people can go ahead and figure out that they can vote themselves money, you're in a lot of problems, because that will always be the way that people choose to go, especially as we go ahead and remove that connection to the consequences. Fewer and fewer people in the United States effectively pay taxes, so they don't really feel that burden. It's spread across a smaller and smaller handful of property owners, and that has its own problems. It means that the individual is less invested in the country that they're supposed to be paying for.
It just feels like the situation doesn't improve at all, right? It continues to get like the state. We're always on defense against the encroachments of the state. So I assume in the book, which I have a copy of and I will read, you get into some of the, how do we at least start to, you know, I always tell everybody, if you're looking at a conservative political book, the last chapter is usually, you know, how do we turn this around? Everybody get more involved, like get involved in your school board, right? Okay, fine. How do we start to turn the trajectory in the other direction? It's going to take up. There's a long term project. We've been getting our butts kicked on the right in terms of the encroachment of the state for a long time, in part because the left is doing it and we do it, too. We just think we do it for better reasons.
Yeah, I have maybe a less hopeful last chapter on this one. I do think there are steps that we can take, but I think we are going through a process. I think that the things that are happening to us are actually part of a larger movement that's happening to all societies, which is the scaling up and massification. I don't think countries were meant to grow into these giant world-spanning empires. I don't think everything can be connected this way. I don't think that we can go ahead and spread out our responsibilities as individuals into a million different organizations and expect them to continue to function. The truth is that we embrace the total state because it took responsibility off of our shoulders. We no longer have to care for our parents. We no longer have to educate our children. We no longer have to take care of the person next to us. We don't have to care about our community, because eventually we can go ahead and hand that power over to the state. And as much as we might whine about that as conservatives, really, in truth, most of us are not willing to take on that individual responsibility. John Adams told us who the Constitution was there to govern. It was there to govern a moral and religious people, and it was inadequate to govern any other. Well, now we're the other, and the Constitution is not governing us well because we are not virtuous enough to take on the responsibilities of the Constitution.
So we're screwed, basically. Good to know. I'm not the only one who thinks this. I mean, people keep asking me, like, what's the... And I always say, you know, in the long run, we're all dead. You got to enjoy your life as much as you can and do the best stuff you can. But if you're worried about the trajectory of the country, history is comforting. It's for me, at least, like being somebody who enjoys reading history, it's comforting because you get to learn about what's happened before, and everyone's been through everything in some way or another, and people have been through much worse than any of us. But also, everybody who's come before us has died, and nobody even really remembers or cares all that much at the end of the day. And then you start to feel a little nihilistic about things. So I feel like if you're going to worry about the American empire and its future, you know, we'll do the best we can, but quite honestly, I don't know how this thing is going to turn out at this point. You know, most great empires fall. Look at the show. Do you ever watch The Crown?
I have not seen that one, no.
Oh, okay. It's funny because people love the show. It's really just a very well shot, like visually pleasing, long, slow death of Great Britain. Like that's what you're from the end of World War II to basically or close to modern day, or, you know, maybe it stops. I don't know. I haven't finished it yet, but 20 years ago or something. And you're just watching Great Britain become a second-rate power that is becoming obsolete. And like, there's nothing anyone... It's kind of like, oh, well, here we are. it's getting less wealthy and less influential every year. I feel like, it happens.
Yeah, the one thing to remember is that every civilization does have its moments. It rises, it gains in greatness, and then eventually it does decline. Now, hopefully, we're not in that situation. The Roman Republic did end, but the Roman Empire rose to greatness and continued for a very long time. I don't want to say that's where we're at. I'm not sure exactly, you know, how our history will unfold, what the morphology of our civilization will be. But I think we do need to recognize that we are in a turning point. We do have kind of an epochal change that is happening in society. And one thing we can do is to go ahead and assume personal responsibility in our own lives and in our own communities. That can at least shelter us to some extent from whatever comes next.
See, I have a theory about this as well, about the personal part of this. I want to come back to it and throw it your way. Total State is the book. Oren, as you can tell, super smart guy, so get your copy of it. But, you know, I keep hearing about people that are like, oh, well, why should I have gold and silver? I have gold and silver at home. Gold and silver, talking about history before, over history you see, it maintains value. It's a store of value. And when things get really tough financially, when big changes come economically, precious metals do very well. Here's why you can have precious metal. To have tangible currency on hand as just part of a bug out plan, or to weather the storm, so to speak, of a real financial calamity. Portfolio diversification, hedge against inflation, store of value, gold increases over time. There's all these different reasons why you can have gold and silver on hand. I'm not saying, you know, pile everything you have into these things. That's crazy. It's have an appropriate amount on hand for your portfolio. Global events just show you how quickly instability can spiral out of control. But there are countries out there, countries, nation states that are hoarding gold and silver and buying more and more of it. So nobody can predict the future with any real accuracy, but you can take steps now to prepare for any uncertainty. The Oxford Gold Group, that's who I trust for my gold and silver. That's who you should go to. They make owning gold and silver simple and easy. Call the Oxford Gold Group. You might qualify for up to $10,000 in free precious metals. The number is 833-995-GOLD, 833-995-G-O-L-D, 833-995-GOLD. Oren, so, you know, people become all obsessed on the left with climate change. I mean, I've been given the right a hard time here, but at least the right lives in reality, right? I mean, you know, we all have our weaknesses. Like, I eat too much chocolate. Like, people don't ever want to change Medicare. Like, I understand, right? Like, there's, but those are real things. The left will get all upset about climate change and they'll say, I can't have kids because, or I shouldn't have children because, you know, climate change footprint and all this sort of stuff. But to me, people like that, people like to wallow in, oh, massive events are going against me. Everything is falling apart. So therefore, it doesn't matter that I'm personally a mess and like don't take care of my people and don't take care of myself. And I feel like that's one of the root fallacies we have in America these days. That's my thought for you. What do you make of it?
No, that's absolutely right. Like I said, much of the power that we've given up to the government, much of the reason that the government has been able to expand the way it has is that we have slowly given up on our ability to take care of our own, take care of our community, do the things that were essential to our own liberty. And while I don't think we're going to suddenly retain all of that liberty or regain all that liberty simply because we go ahead and, you know, take care of the guy next to us or attend our church more or run for school board or anything, I do think that there are key steps that we can take. When things come apart, we've noticed that it does matter who's in charge of localities. I mean, think about the COVID experience, right? A lot of people put their eyes on Ron DeSantis in Florida. Many people moved to my home state because they recognized that who was in charge mattered. And the fact that Florida was able to go ahead and take serious action on its own to protect its people during that time made a real difference in the way that they live their lives. It doesn't solve every problem. We're still subject to a lot of serious issues that have a more national character, like mass immigration. But the quality of life in Florida is notably different, and there's a reason people make the choice to move here. And so if we go ahead and take action, especially think about something like a local sheriff who has a big control over whether or not, say, you know, violations of the Second Amendment get enforced inside his jurisdiction, that can have a real impact on your life, your community, the well-being of your family. And so while the general fate of the United States may be in question, you can still take very serious and important action to take care of those around you. And I don't think anyone should despair or shirk that duty just because, you know, the federal government in the United States is incompetent.
There we go. That's about as hopeful as we're going to get here. So, Oren, thank you so much. The Total State, great work. Appreciate you being here. Check out Oren's show on The Blaze as well. Thank you, my friend.
Thanks for having me.
Since 9/11, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been committed to improving the lives of America's veterans, first responders, and their families. For over 20 years, the foundation has helped America keep its solemn promise to never forget. Tunnel to Towers provides mortgage-free homes to Gold Star families and the families of fallen first responders with young children, and build specially adapted smart homes for catastrophically injured veterans, as well as work to eradicate veteran homelessness. David Marshall served in the Army during World War II and fought in the Battle of the Bulge. He's never forgotten the sacrifices of his comrades in arms, nor the efforts of first responders on 9/11 and in the days and months that followed. He is a loyal and proud foundation donor. Tunnel to Towers is committed to supporting veterans, first responders, and their families, and so many of them need your help. Join the foundation on its mission to do good and never forget. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at t2t.org. That's T, the number 2T.org. If you are an accredited investor, U.S. oil and gas should be part of your investment portfolio. Visit LabradorEnergy.com. Beyond the possibility to invest in a sector that historically delivers sound returns, when you invest with Labrador Energy, you may be able to structure your investment to offset active or passive income. According to many sources, U.S. oil and gas drilling remains one of the best tax-advantaged income investments available. Visit LabradorEnergy.com. You may be able to reduce your tax liability while investing in a sector that has historically delivered sound returns. Learn more at LabradorEnergy.com today.
Offer for accredited investors only. Past performance is no indication of future results. Investing involves risk. Consult your legal, tax, and financial advisors and read the prospectus before making any investment decisions. Visit LabradorEnergy.com for the prospectus and more information.
So I know you've got a lot going on, but remember, I'm here for you. So bother me when no one's listening, because I will. Bother me when it feels like it won't get better, because it can. Bother me because you're never a bother. Whether it's a low point or a crisis, get help for yourself or a friend. Learn more at neverabother.org or call or text 988, available 24/7.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.